More constitutional abuse next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, very good friend, and Executive Director of Camp American,
that's
Chef
right,
Michaelis.
Because it is that season, Barry. It's time to get ready to teach your kids about the Constitution, about the Christian heritage of the United States of America, about historical documents, and also for them to have a little fun. You know, we don't emphasize that enough, but the kids will have fun, guaranteed.
They have learning and recreation.
That's right.
We got both kinds of fun.
That's right. We got both kinds. So good to be back with you, and we are getting ready for Camp American. So thanks for bringing it up.
Well, that's good. I wanted to make sure we started bringing it up because we need to keep educating people, Chuck, on why the Constitution matters, why it's important that we speak up when the Constitution is abused, especially by those who we've entrusted by our votes, well, maybe by other people's votes in this case, to uphold and defend that Constitution. Well, that's the oath that they take when they're sworn into office. You see, every office holder who gets appointed or elected has to stand up and put their hand on a Bible, or in some instances, the Quran. Or I believe that we now have an Indian representative who put their hand on the sacred Hindu text. So now we've got multiple texts that you can swear on now.
That's a problem because I don't think there is a specific sacred Hindu text.
Well, there's probably not. It was probably Siddhartha or something of that nature, which isn't really a Hindu
Maybe
text.
Maybe the Bhagavad Gita or something.
I think that actually might have been what it was. But anyhow, the point is that these people swear an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. Big problem is, it seems like we might have more of those domestic enemies than we have of the foreign ones. And I think it's interesting that we're talking about this today because we're talking about an action by President Barack Obama, which is, on the face of it, Charles, an action that he takes that is supposed to protect us against those foreign enemies of the Constitution. Now, what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is about a week ago or so, on a weekend, on Sunday, you remember right before the fiscal cliff, everybody was in D.C. and they were all doing this stuff. And even Barack Obama came back from Hawaii so he could basically tell Joe Biden what to do and before he went back. But on Sunday, he did something that he wasn't doing with anything else, and that was he signed an extension of an existing law. Now, which law was that, Charles, that he signed into effect or extended? It's a 5-year extension. The law was the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Sounds like an interesting piece of work, doesn't it, Chuck?
Well, Barry, as always, it's named something that sounds very patriotic and very good.
I wanted to stand up and salute a flag when
that's
I heard
right.
it. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That sounds, Chuck, if you were just listening to the title, as the average citizen, what are the images that you would have in your head? That we are going to be doing surveillance on foreign intelligence operations. In other words, overseas. Correct?
You'd think.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, au contraire, you see, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which would have expired at the end of 2012, had Barack Obama not signed his 5-year extension plan, allows for electronic surveillance of suspected terrorists.
Well,
now let me unpack that.
Yeah.
Suspected terrorists means anybody the administration feels is a terrorist, because there's really not a clear definition in any of the acts of what a terrorist is. And we know from the NDAA and the Enemy Expatriation Act and all these other ones that have been coming down through there that, by and large, they don't want to define it because they want it to apply to American citizens, even though this is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
And hence the name.
Yes.
Because the easiest way to get people to acquiesce to the reduction of their or the elimination of their constitutional freedoms is to paint it in terms of an emergency or a war and say, in order to protect you. This is where the government steps in and attempts to be God. This is one of those places. Because what the leaders are saying, and remember, Obama only signed this thing. People are always focused on him. All he did was sign it.
Well, the United States Senate and the Congress
had
a big part to play in this because it was a law that they extended.
The only reason he has it to sign is because your friends, the Republicans, in both the House and the Senate, those great freedom lovers, basically said, you are a dangerous entity, and therefore we have to be able to look at your emails, tap your phone, see what you're looking at on the internet, read your emails, because you could be dangerous. You could be working alongside as a co-conspirator with some foreign power. Now, the fact is that my emails, my internet activity, my telephone conversations, what I watch on television are not the business of the federal government. I am in no way any kind of a threat toward them. And the idea that I am is simply, again, the result of this idea that everyone is a suspect. Now, that being said, what goes on with this thing? How is the government acting as God in this case? Give me more power and I will give you security or safety. That is how the government is acting as God.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, safety and security are up to the individual working through their God. But the government says, oh, no, no, no. In order for you to be safe, all you have to do is give me more power.
That's right.
And
that's
I will make you safe.
Now, Chuck, it's interesting here because the original FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, was passed in 1978 during the Jimmy Carter administration. And it basically prescribed procedures for the physical and electronic surveillance and collection of, quote, foreign intelligence information between, quote, foreign powers and, quote, agents of foreign powers. Now, because of subsequent amendments, that can include American citizens that are suspected of being engaged in espionage and violating U.S. law or on territory under United States control, because, you see, the law doesn't apply outside the United States. This is domestic surveillance,
right,
ladies and gentlemen. Domestic surveillance, which is supposed to be governed by the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which provides against warrantless searches and seizures.
Well, Barry, do you remember?
But there's a big problem here, Chuck, and I'll let you get into this in a minute. There's a big problem here because the extension that Barack Obama signed, which was passed 7323 by the United States Senate a week ago Friday, and was passed prior to that by the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, allows those searches to be warrantless.
Warrantless, and therein lies the major problem. The Constitution is absolutely clear. In order to do surveillance, in order to be privy to that information, you must have a warrant. In fact, the implication is that a judge must take a look at it and say, you have enough evidence to convince me that you have. Right now, it's a rubber stamp. And of course, with this law, no rubber stamp required.
Well, and that's the whole point, Chuck. At least with a warrant, in order to secure a warrant, you have to go to a court and show them that you have probable cause, that you have got enough information that the court would give you that warrant to violate that person's freedoms. Because we have a right to be secure in our persons and our papers,
right,
by the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, unless there can be given a sufficient cause by legitimate law enforcement to the court to say, we have reasonable suspicion that this individual's actions are of a nature to be, as we say now, after the Patriot Act, terroristic.
Well, if you'll recall, there are a lot of people, I'm sure, in the audience that aren't old enough to recall, but I am anyway. This law came out of a misdirect. And that misdirect, if you'll recall, was the CIA was in trouble because it was doing domestic surveillance in the late 70s. And essentially, all these laws were passed that basically said this, the CIA can't do this, can't do that, can't do another thing. One of the things it couldn't do was domestic surveillance. But instead, what they did was they took it out of the hands of the CIA and they put it into a couple of other agencies, the FBI, a couple of other Justice Department. What they then did was they took some of the fetters off. So they said, we're going to protect you from the evil CIA. And in fact, what they were doing was taking it out of one toolbox and putting it in another toolbox and taking the lock off.
Well, and Chuck, and you're right, because, and this even gets worse, because the act created a special court that they could go to get the warrants, called a FISA court. Now, that's seven judges that's appointed by the Chief Justice of the United States, and they serve seven-year terms. But the court is housed in the U.S. Department of Justice, where the FBI is.
Yes, right.
Okay. However, prior to December the 30th, which is when Barack Obama signed the five-year extension, which now allowed them not to have to worry about going to the FISA court to get a warrant, the original law clearly spelled out that the government could seek a court order permitting the surveillance of a suspect. Now, the approval of a FISA application requires the court find probable cause, so it follows the Fourth Amendment, that the target of the surveillance be a foreign power or an agent of a foreign power. Now, that's specific phrasing, Chuck, because to be an agent of a foreign power means that you are under the employ of a foreign power.
That's right.
Not that you were cruising around YouTube and happened to run across Al Gore Jazeera television and sent him a donation. You know, that's okay. Not that anybody would do that, don't you?
But the point don't is, kid yourself.
And it says that, and also as part of the court's determination, that the places at which surveillance is requested is used or will be used by that foreign power or its agents. So in other words, you can't just say, I'm going to come in here and put a tap on Chuck Michaels's phone. The location actually would have had to have been used or will be used by a foreign power. In other words, you had to have your reasonable cause. You had to have already known that up front. They're going to go to this safe house, so we need to tap the phones in that safe house. Now, it gets worse. In addition, the court must find that the proposed surveillance meets certain, quote, minimization requirements for information pertaining to U.S. citizens. Okay, Charles, what we have here is when he signed that extension into law, they don't have to worry about any of that anymore.
Nope.
All of that's out the window because they don't have to get a warrant. They don't have to show probable cause. They don't have to show that it is a foreign power or an agent of a foreign power. They don't have to show that the places that they're going to surveil have been or will be reasonably, and they know because of other intelligence traffic that it's being used by these foreign powers or agents, and that who cares about minimization? We're going to grab everything you got. We're going to grab your emails, your phone records. We're going to grab everything because, and it doesn't matter that you're a U.S. citizen and the Fourth Amendment says that you're to be secure in your persons and your effects. We don't have to do that anymore.
In the remaining time, I'm going to draw a scenario for you based on the things we've been talking about on the last 2 days. Now, you may not think that Hobby Lobby and all this thing may have anything to do with this.
Oh, I can see the connection.
You can see where I'm going, right?
Oh, yes.
Basically, what you say is these people, because they are resisting the efforts of the federal government,
exactly,
are potential terrorists and, in fact, are working, even though they may have no contact with foreign powers, they are working in concert with them to undermine the authority of the United States government, and therefore, we must have this surveillance of them. That is the way people who are worried about losing their position and losing their personal power begin to think.
Right.
That is, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but that is Stalin-esque. This is the way Joseph Stalin ran the Soviet Union. Anybody who would oppose him, anyone who would come to him and say, you know, I don't think you ought to do it that way, suddenly became an enemy of the state because Joseph Stalin was the state.
Yes, he was.
And so I'm not saying that Barack Obama looks at himself as the state, although he does, but the other 535 members of Congress do as well because they passed this thing.
Yes, they did.
So we've got 536 people who are sitting there saying to themselves, we need to have this power. We can't let anybody who might oppose this power be out there, and we have to know exactly what they're thinking about and what they're planning.
I can see that very clearly, Charles. This is very, very dangerous. There were some of the lawmakers who wanted oversight, congressional oversight, and privacy protections in this reauthorization. They didn't get it. So there was a fight over that. Now, of course, who was it that begged on the front? Now, first of all, FISA was introduced in the 70s. By Ted Kennedy. It was later amended with the Terrorist Surveillance Act by Mike DeWine, and among others. And now Dianne Feinstein was the lead charger on this to tell them to get it and pass the bill so it could be sent straight to the president's desk. I think this is absolutely ridiculous, Chuck. Now, Rand Paul and others tried to offer amendments to beef up privacy protections, and all four of their amendments were voted down.
Well, do you know who most of the power is handed to in this case?
Well, it's handed to the DOJ.
National Security Agency.
NSA. And Homeland Security, of course, would get a piece of this.
Right. So basically what's happened is, we are out of time, but basically what's happened is we've taken power that was originally used illegally by the CIA and handed it legally over to NSA.
Right.
So,
but I don't think it's very legal because it's a violation of the Fourth
Amendment. No, of course, it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, and a law that is without constitutional support is null and void. Thank you, John Marshall. Unfortunately, his judicial philosophy has been used to dismantle most of the Constitution, but he was right on that case. That being said, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for a continuation of the discussion on principles and policies.